property law. When you hear that, I bet a lot of you law students out there, you kind of tense up a little bit. You're thinking, oh man, this is going to be tough.
Yeah.
All those rules, all those really, really specific rules.
Absolutely. Yeah. It can be dense.
But you know what though? Today, we're going to show you how these rules, stuff like recording statutes, can actually unlock some really, really interesting high stakes legal battles.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, it can be really dramatic, honestly. And the case we're looking at today, it illustrates that perfectly.
Yeah. So we're doing a deep dive today into Valencia v. Lundgren, a case out of New Mexico.
Yeah.
Family dispute over ranch land. And what makes this case so interesting is that, you know, a lot of times you think, oh, first one to record wins, right?
Right.
But not so fast.
Not always.
Sometimes it doesn't quite work out that way.
Yeah, that's right. And that's exactly what this case is going to teach us all about. You might think recording statutes, you know, it's just a race to the courthouse.
Right.
But there's this other really important question that this case brings up. Okay, you won the race, great. But are you actually a purchaser in the eyes of the law?
Mm.
That's a really crucial distinction. And our deep dive today, we're going to be looking at that definition. What does it mean to be a purchaser? And what role does this idea of consideration play? Because that's a big deal here.
Yeah.
And this case is just so valuable because it really gives us this window into how courts, how they approach property disputes, especially when we're talking about gifts and these conflicting claims, these competing deeds.
Exactly. So picture this, right?
Yep.
You got Joe Valencia, a father in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going back to the early 90s here.
Okay.
He wants to transfer some of his ranch land, give some to his son, Ernest, and some to his daughter, Loretta Lundgren.
Mm.
But here's the thing. The deed for Loretta, the one that was supposed to have the family house on it.
Oh.
Well, they messed up the description. They accidentally put it on a totally different piece of land.
Oh, that's not good. That's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
It's a classic property law mix-up. So you can see where this is going, right? Fast forward a few years to 1995, and the father, he's trying to fix things. He creates a new deed for Loretta, a corrected one. This time, clearly giving her the land with the house.
Okay, makes sense.
But there's always a but in these stories. In the meantime, Ernest, the son, he'd already gone and recorded that original deed, the one with the wrong description.
Oh, no.
So now we've got a real mess on our hands.
Rah, that is a problem.
And when Loretta finally decided, enough is enough, I'm taking this to court, well, the trial court, they sided with Ernest. Their logic, simple. His deed was recorded first.
That seems... I mean, on the surface, that's fair, right?
Right, exactly. It seems pretty straightforward.
So you get there first, you record it first, you should win.
First come, first served, right?
Yeah, right.
But this is where our deep dive gets really interesting. This is where things take a turn. Because the appellate court, they took a much, much closer look. And they focused on this really fundamental question. Can someone who gets property as a pure gift, no strings attached, no money exchanged, nothing of value given in return, can they actually be protected by the recording statute if someone comes along later with a different deed, maybe a more accurate one, that actually reflects the true intention?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, right? And this is really important for all of you law students listening. To get to the answer, we got to understand New Mexico's recording statute. It works on this race notice principle, which a lot of states use.
Right.
So basically, to have the strongest claim, you need to be a purchaser. You got to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
You got to record that deed before anyone else, and you can't know about any other claims that haven't been recorded yet. But here's the catch, and we keep coming back to this, the word purchaser. What does that really mean?
Yeah, exactly. It's not just about getting the land, right?
Yeah.
There's a specific legal meaning behind it.
Absolutely. In New Mexico, and in many places with similar laws, being a purchaser doesn't just mean you end up with the property. You have to have given consideration. Think of it like this. You got to give something of value in exchange for the property.
So like money, right?
Money, yeah, that's the most common one. But it could also be another piece of property.
Okay.
Or maybe services you did in the past. It's got to have some kind of monetary value. Like you can't just say, oh, I gave them a hug, that's consideration. No, it's got to be something real, something you could put a price tag on.
Right, so it's a real exchange. You give something, you get something.
Exactly, it's a two-way street. And that's where the trial court, in this Valencia case, they kind of missed the mark. They just looked at the fact that Ernest recorded first. They didn't really think about Loretta's argument. She said, and she even had a sworn statement to back it up, that Ernest never paid a dime for that land. It was a gift from their father.
And that sworn statement, that's a big deal, right? Because it's basically saying, look, there's no record of any payment, no proof Ernest actually bought this land.
Right. And the appellate court, they saw that as a huge red flag. Their whole analysis, it really hinged on this idea of purchaser. Was Ernest really a purchaser in the eyes of the law? They looked at that legal definition and they said, listen, if he got that land for free, if he didn't give anything of value for it, then he's not a purchaser. The recording statute, the NMSA section 14.93, it doesn't automatically put his deed ahead of Loretta's. In this situation, legally speaking, Ernest is a dun, someone who received a gift. And the rules can be totally different for dunnies in property disputes.
So just because you're first to the recording office doesn't mean you're home free if you didn't actually purchase the property. But here's the thing. If Ernest is a dun and the recording statute doesn't give us a clear answer, what happens next? We've got these two deeds. They say different things. Loretta's got her claim based on that corrected deed, the one that seems to show the father's real intention. What do we view?
Well, that's what makes this case so fascinating. The appellate court, they saw that these conflicting descriptions in the deeds, they created this whole cloud of ambiguity.
Right.
And when you have that kind of uncertainty, especially when it seems like the property owner, the father in this case, had one clear intention all along. Well, courts, they'll often look beyond what's written in the documents.
They're not just stuck with the words on the paper, right?
Right.
They can look at other information. So what kind of information are we talking about here?
What we call extrinsic evidence. In Valencia v. Lundgren, that could be the father's will. That might give us some clues about how he wanted to divide his property among his kids. It could also mean looking at the bigger picture of the family's property dealings, trying to figure out, okay, what was the father really trying to do when he was transferring these properties?
So they're trying to understand the context. Like, why was that house accidentally listed on Ernest's land in the first place? That's a pretty big clue, right?
Yeah, exactly. It suggests a mistake. It suggests that the father always meant for that house to go to Loretta's.
It seems like the court is less interested in who filed what first and more interested in actually figuring out what the father wanted, what was his real intention.
That's exactly it. They want to get to the truth of the matter. And the appellate court, they basically said, look, if Ernest didn't pay for this land, if it was a gift, then the trial court needs to do a much deeper investigation. They need to look at all the evidence, the deeds, the will, everything surrounding these property transfers, and figure out what Joe Valencia truly intended. And remember, that mistake in Loretta's first deed, that's a big piece of the puzzle.
So the appellate court, they overturned the trial court's decision and sent the case back down for another look. What exactly did they tell the trial court to do?
Their main instruction was really clear. They said, if you find, based on all the evidence, that Ernest didn't actually give anything in return for that property, then the recorded statute doesn't mean he automatically wins. You have to look beyond the recording date. You have to consider everything, all the extrinsic evidence we talked about, and figure out what the father truly intended, who should rightfully own that property. The court really emphasized that recording statutes, they're there to protect people who actually buy property, who invest in it, not just people who happen to get a gift and record a deed first because of some error or mistake.
So let's summarize all of this. Let's break down the big takeaways from Valencia v. Lundgren. What do our listeners really need to remember from this deep dive?
The most important thing. In New Mexico and in lots of states that have those race notice recording statutes, being the first to record your deed, it doesn't always mean you win a property dispute. You have to actually be a purchaser, as defined by the law.
Meaning, you have to give something of value in exchange.
Exactly. The trial court, they messed up by focusing only on who recorded first. They didn't pay enough attention to Loretta's evidence. Evidence that suggested Ernest didn't give anything for that land. The appellate court, they fixed that. They said, listen, if he got it as a gift, he's a dun, not a purchaser. The recording statute doesn't automatically give him the upper hand.
And because of that, the case went back to the trial court.
Right.
With instructions to look beyond the recording date.
Right. The appellate court said, examine everything. Look at the will. Look at all the circumstances. Figure out what the father really wanted.
So before we finish up here, are there any other maybe smaller points about this case that we should highlight? Any interesting details?
Yeah, there are a couple of things. First, there's this idea of a clear gift versus a situation where maybe there's a tiny amount of consideration given. Like, imagine if Ernest had given his dad $1 for the land.
Oh, interesting.
That's what we call nominal consideration. Courts will look at those kinds of situations really carefully. Was it a real purchase or was it just a gift disguised as a purchase?
So even a small amount of money, it might not be enough to make you a purchaser.
Exactly. And second, we've been talking about New Mexico being a race notice state, but this case shows us that both parts of that are really important. You got to win the race to record, but you also have to be a real purchaser. You can't just rely on being fast.
Right. It's not just about speed.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have the substance, too. You got to have given something of value.
Exactly. And last but not least, this case brings up the idea of equity in property law.
Okay.
Even though we have all these specific rules about recording, courts can still look beyond the strict letter of the law.
They can consider fairness.
Exactly. They want to make sure things are fair, and they want to make sure they're upholding the true intentions of the people involved. Especially in situations like this, where it's a family transfer and there was clearly a mistake in that first deed.
So sometimes, even if you do everything by the book, it might not be enough if it leads to an unfair result, or if it goes against what the property owner really intended.
Exactly. Which brings us to our final thought for all you listeners.
Okay, here we go.
Recording statutes, they're supposed to make things clear, make property ownership certain.
Right, no confusion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then we have this idea of consideration and the fact that courts are willing to look at other evidence when things are unclear. So how do you think these two things work together?
Mm-hmm.
How do we balance certainty with fairness? How do we prevent people from taking advantage or make sure we're honoring what property owners really want to do? Think about that. Think about how these ideas might play out in your legal careers. It's where the rules meet real life, and that's where things get really interesting.
Yeah, that's a great point. The law is more than just rules on paper.
Right.
It's about people. It's about their intentions. It's about making sure things are just and equitable.
Absolutely. And that's what makes it so compelling, honestly.
Definitely. Well, that was quite the deep dive. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And for all you law students out there, keep those brains sharp.
Yeah, keep studying.
And we'll catch you next time.
See ya.